Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nurturees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Zen Teaching of Bodhidharma is a compact but influential presentation of early Zen thought associated with Bodhidharma, the semi-legendary figure often credited with bringing Chan Buddhism to China. Rather than offering a step-by-step meditation manual, the book points readers toward a direct understanding of mind and awakening. It is known for its stark, uncompromising tone, and for challenging reliance on rituals, intellectual analysis, or external authority as the primary path to liberation. Across its teachings, the emphasis falls on seeing one's nature, loosening attachment to concepts, and meeting experience without clinging or resistance. Many editions frame the material through traditional treatises attributed to Bodhidharma, alongside brief contextual notes that help modern readers approach its dense, paradoxical style. Read slowly, the work functions less like a set of arguments to win, and more like a series of prompts designed to shift perception and clarify what Zen means by direct insight. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, direct seeing over doctrinal accumulation. A central thread in teachings attributed to Bodhidharma is the insistence that awakening is not primarily a matter of collecting ideas, mastering theories, or perfecting religious credentials. The book repeatedly points away from secondhand knowledge and toward direct seeing of mind. This does not mean scripture and study are useless, but they are treated as supports that can easily become substitutes for realization. The reader is pushed to notice how quickly the intellect turns spiritual life into an object to possess, a view to defend, or a ladder to climb. Zen, in this early framing, asks for an immediate recognition of what is already present prior to analysis. That recognition is described in terms of seeing one's nature, a phrase that can be misunderstood as discovering a new essence. Instead, it functions as an invitation to notice the awareness that is already functioning before thought labels it. The challenge is that the mind seeks certainty, while the teaching undermines the craving for conceptual security. The practical implication is a shift from treating practice as self-improvement to treating practice as uncovering what obscures clarity. Readers encounter a tone that can feel abrupt, but it serves a purpose to prevent comfort in explanations and to encourage experiential verification. Secondly, mind, Buddha nature, and the meaning of no mind. The book explores mind not as a personal possession, but as the field in which experience appears. In early Zen language, Buddha is not a distant being to appease, but a way of naming awakened awareness. This is closely tied to the notion of Buddha nature, the claim that awakening is not imported from outside but recognized within. Yet the text also warns against turning Buddha nature into a metaphysical object. When it speaks of no mind, it is not recommending blankness, trance, or suppression of thought. It is pointing to freedom from fixation, where thoughts arise and pass without being taken as a solid self. This theme reframes many common spiritual efforts rather than fighting mental activity. The practitioner learns to see thoughts as movements that do not define what one is. The text also critiques the habit of seeking Buddha through images, merit-making, or special states, because those pursuits often reinforce the sense of separation that practice is meant to dissolve. In this view, delusion is not merely moral failure but misrecognition, mistaking transient phenomena and narratives for a permanent identity. The teaching aims at a simple but demanding shift resting in awareness without clinging and recognizing that what one seeks is not elsewhere. Thirdly, practice without grasping meditation, stillness, and daily life. Although the book is not a modern how-to guide, it conveys an approach to practice that centers on steadiness and non-attachment. Meditation is implied as a means of meeting the mind as it is, not as a technique to manufacture enlightenment. Stillness here is not merely physical quiet, it is the capacity to remain unhooked from compulsive reactions. The teachings emphasize that the problem is not sensory experience, but the grasping that follows it. The reflex to cling to pleasure, resist discomfort, and build identity from passing conditions. This has immediate relevance to ordinary life. The practice becomes visible in how one responds to praise and blame, gain and loss, attraction and aversion. Rather than treating spiritual life as separate from work, relationships, or hardship, the text points toward a kind of inner non-dependence that can be carried through changing circumstances. This is why the style can seem austere. It aims to cut through the tendency to negotiate with reality. Readers are invited to notice the subtle ways they bargain for control, then to relax that demand. Over time, this stance can foster patience, simplicity, and resilience because the mind is trained to stop building extra suffering on top of unavoidable conditions. Fourthly, emptiness, non-duality, and the limits of language. A hallmark of Zen literature is its distrust of language as a final container for truth, and this book reflects that suspicion. It repeatedly gestures toward emptiness and non-duality, themes shared with broader Mahayana Buddhism, while refusing to let the reader turn them into abstract philosophy. Emptiness is not presented as nihilism, but as the lack of fixed independent essence in phenomena and in the self. When seen clearly, this loosens the grip of rigid categories and reduces the friction created by insisting that experience conform to mental models. Non-duality, likewise, is not a mystical slogan, but a way of describing how subject and object are not as separate as they seem when the mind stops clinging to conceptual boundaries. Because these insights are difficult to express without distortion, the teaching often uses negation and paradox, not to be obscure, but to prevent premature closure. The reader is forced to confront how quickly words become substitutes for insight. The book, therefore, trains a kind of intellectual humility to use concepts as pointers, then let them go. For modern readers accustomed to linear explanations, this can feel frustrating, yet that frustration can be productive if it reveals the mind's demand to capture reality. The aim is to shift from thinking about experience to directly inhabiting it. Lastly, ethics, renunciation, and freedom from merit calculations. Another important topic is the relationship between ethics and awakening. The book is often associated with a critique of superficial religiosity, including the tendency to treat good deeds as currency that purchases spiritual status. This does not dismiss ethical conduct. Instead, it challenges the motive. When actions are performed to accumulate merit, they can reinforce self-centeredness and subtle pride. The teaching points toward a more direct integrity grounded in clarity rather than reward-seeking. Renunciation in this context is not primarily about rejecting the world, but about relinquishing attachment to outcomes, identity, and craving. This shift has ethical consequences when the self is not being constantly defended and embellished. Compassion and restraint can arise more naturally. The book also implies that true practice is not measured by outward signs, spiritual titles, or public performances. It is measured by the degree of freedom from compulsive grasping and aversion. For readers, this can be a sobering mirror. It invites examination of where one's spirituality has become another project of self-construction. The emphasis on simplicity and inner honesty can help align behavior with understanding, making ethics less like rule-following and more like the natural expression of a mind that is less entangled. In conclusion, this book suits readers who want an uncompromising introduction to early Zen perspectives on awakening, especially those interested in the roots of Chan and the figure traditionally linked with its transmission. It is best for people willing to read slowly, sit with ambiguity, and test ideas against direct experience rather than looking for a comforting narrative. Students of meditation, Buddhist philosophy, and contemplative psychology can benefit from its insistence that clarity comes from seeing mind directly and from releasing attachment to concepts, status, and spiritual bargaining. In daily life, the teachings can support greater emotional steadiness because they repeatedly highlight how suffering is amplified by grasping, resistance, and identity fixation. Compared to many modern Zen books that prioritize accessibility, this work offers a sharper, more elemental voice that can cut through complacency. It is worth buying if you want a foundational text that emphasizes practice and insight over lifestyle branding. And if you appreciate a tradition that uses language as a pointer rather than a conclusion. Its brevity also makes it revisitable, allowing readers to return over time and notice how the same passages land differently as practice deepens. If you would like to support Bodhidharma, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.